Williams in Lyme, Lexington, Pennsylvania on July 9th, 1997, interviewing Mrs. Claire Schultz. And Mrs. Schultz, let's start at the beginning. I have that you were born November 17th, 1924 in Eders, PA.
That's right.
But I don't have any information about family background. Tell me about your growing up, who your folks were, that kind of thing.
Eders, PA is New York, Pennsylvania. It's in what was then Pennsylvania Dutch country. My paternal grandmother was Pennsylvania Dutch, a lovely woman who had 17 children and was very, very motherly. My grandfather, my maiden name had been Kelly, was an Irishman who came over. His parents came over, I guess, during the famine. The potato famine, and so they were not wealthy people at all, but my grandmother and grandfather had a fairly large farm that provided the food for all those children, and they didn't have enough clothes to all go to school at the same time, so they traded off clothes and went every other day or something so that they didn't get well educated. But my mother's mother died when she was only 4 years old. And my grandfather was a painter and general laborer, and so they were also not well provided for either.
They were from Ireland, you said?
Not my mother's folks, but my father's.
Mr. Bowman's
father was from Ireland. And my grandfather took as good care of his children as he could, and he was a very responsible man, but they all grew up without the influence of a mother, and that helped to shape my mother's personality, which was a rather sad one. She was a person who was depressed a good part of her life, and took that out on her children, and I was the firstborn, and she resented me very much because she was just getting started on a career. She hadn't gone to high school, but she'd gone to business school, and she already had a job as a court clerk. And was the fastest typist in Pennsylvania at that moment.
Huh.
And then she met my father, and they got married, and I was born 9 months later when she felt that I had ruined her career.
So How old was she at the time?
She turned 19 3 days after I was born.
Wow.
She was very young. And so anyhow, mother and I had a very rough relationship, and so did the other, my brother and sister, who were younger. So, that was not a good start in life, but some people either let it break them or make them, and I'm told that it helped to make me, and I was a stubborn little cuss, and I managed to do things on my own. Mother went to the hospital when I was 8, saying that she was paralyzed from the neck down, but the doctors could never come to terms with that, and so she, when I was 11, she came back home, having gone through all the money that my father had ever saved, and miraculously could walk and do everything that she had never done in 3 years, supposedly. But I know enough about physiology now to know that was impossible. She had to have been moving during that time, or she would have not been able to just get up and walk.
So she was in the hospital 3 years?
For 3 years. Various hospitals. She started with Mayo Clinic, which, she was an intelligent woman, and she'd read a lot, and she knew about Mayo Clinic. So she went there, and they dismissed her, saying they couldn't find anything wrong with her. And then she went to Johns Hopkins, and then they sent her back to the York Hospital, where she stayed for a year or so. And all the time, my father believed that she was paralyzed.
So she wasn't walking or any of those things during that time, huh?
According to her, but she must have been. I mean, it's not physiologically possible that your muscles atrophy to that extent and be able to walk. So anyhow, that's the sort of flavor of my childhood.
Now, what was your father's education?
He only got through fourth grade. He was one of the older of the 17 children, and he took responsibility for doing the farming and helping his mom and just taking care of things. And then he went into World War I when he was quite young. He lied his age and got in. I don't know how he did that, but he got in very early. And then when he came home, he had been gassed while he was over in France, and It didn't affect him very much when he was young, and the effects of that showed up later. And he was also shot in a hunting accident at his hip. And but he didn't let any of that bother him. He got a job on the railroad at age 14. Mm-hmm. And he always lied his age and managed to get things that he wanted very much to have. So he got started early on the Pennsylvania Railroad, and all the time that I knew him, he was either an engineer, a fireman first, and then an engineer,
mm-hmm.
and the highest pay that you can make on the railroad, which wasn't all that bad. I mean, during the Depression, mm-hmm. that was a pretty mm-hmm. good job. So, and he was a very kind, loving, generous kind of person, whereas my mother was selfish and mean and unpleasant all the time. But the two of them managed to get on. My father accepted anything my mother did.
Wow.
We went on. So anyway, while she was in the hospital for those 3 years, from 8 to 11 of my age, I had this younger brother and younger sister and then brother to take care of, too. They were 2 and 3 years younger than I. I mean, all together it was spread over 5 years. And a 6-year difference between me and my brother. And so I took care of those two kids all the time, got them off to school and that kind of thing once my brother was old enough. And took care of the house, did all the cooking and washing and ironing, took care of the chickens and the pigs, and pumped gas for people who stopped at our gasoline station.
Oh, you operated in some kind of store?
My father had in addition to working on a railroad, he had a repair garage. He sold cars. And he had a repair garage, and then out front we had a couple of gasoline pumps. And the service to anybody who stopped for gasoline. So that was how I grew up. We lived there until I was 12. And then we moved to another place, and my life changed quite a bit because I'd been in a one-room grade school up until then, and I skipped seventh grade. So by the time I was 12, I was ready to go into ninth grade. And then we moved to this new location on the other side of Harrisburg. I started into ninth grade. The first day we were there, somebody came by, a principal, I guess, and said who wanted to go to college and who wanted to take the academic subjects. And I put up my hand. I had no idea what academic subjects were, but I put up my hand. And that got me started on Latin and math and that kind of thing. And I always did well in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so that turned out to have been a lucky hand raising on my part.
And why did you all move from York area over to Harrisburg? That's quite a move.
Yeah, in a way it was, but my mother always hated where we lived. And she didn't like being at the garage, and she felt as if she was being discriminated against by being in surroundings like that, because the garage, the house was attached to the garage, and she thought it was demeaning somehow.
Yeah.
And we didn't have very much ground. We just had a couple of acres where the garage was. But the new place that Daddy bought was 33 acres, and it was up on top of the hill and had a beautiful view.
Mm.
And so Mother felt that was a step up in life. And
mm-hmm.
She was more content after we moved there.
Mm.
She was also older and had more sense, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mother's still living, but she had a stroke 2 years ago when she was 89, not when she was 90. And she's been in a nursing home ever since and doesn't remember a thing from her past.
Oh, really?
And so suddenly, I mean, she doesn't know her own kids other than me. She recognizes me when the very first time I came to see her after the stroke, she knew who I was, and everybody was astounded. But she never knows that I've been there or haven't been there. She just says, oh, Claire never comes to see me. But she's happy. She's not sarcastic and mean like she used to be. She's a great lady in her own estimation. So it's like, oh, pardon me while I eat. I have to do this. I'm not accustomed to eating in front of guests. And she
Well, did the relationship improve over the years?
No. If anything, it got worse because Daddy always wanted to see us. He loved his kids, and he and I had always been very close. I'd go out and sell cars with him. I'd say, step inside. You'd be surprised at how roomy this is when I was 3 years old or something. And so anyhow, he and I spent a great deal of time together. He'd take me fishing with him and that kind of thing. So what was your question? Oh, did the relationship improve? No, Mother resented me after she came back from the hospital because Daddy and I had to cooperate very closely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he'd be away on the railroad for sometimes 3 days at a time. And he'd come back and check up and see what he could do to help out with whatever needed doing. And back in those days, you couldn't wash clothes very safely because the wringer, the kids would get their hands caught in the wringers. So he would usually make me wait and do the washing when he was home so he could use the wringer and that kind of thing. And he was a good cook because on the railroad the men had to make their own meals when they were traveling. Mm-hmm. And he liked to cook, so he would cook some things and leave them sometimes so that I wouldn't have to do so much cooking. And he'd look after the animals and make sure that nothing was being neglected. You know. Mm-hmm. So we were a team, and Mother resented that very much. She would always say, "Oh, you can wrap your father around your little finger," and it just make fun of me all the time. And, but she never did any cleaning, any dishwashing, anything. I mean, she was too much of a lady, and I had to do that. From the time I was 3 years old, I had a stool, and I'd do the dishes, and I'd do the ironing, and all that kind of thing.
Wow, that's quite an upbringing.
Yeah, it was. You would think that would have been disastrous, but it wasn't.
Yeah, it seems to have made you really determined, and then came this chance to take the academic track in high school.
In high school, which I did. And at age 15, I hired myself out. I was already a junior in high school at age 15. And I hired myself out for the summer to be a governess for a little girl. And eventually, it turned out I was also the cook for the family. And entertain people like the governor of Pennsylvania and had to cook the meal and serve it myself. And so that was very good training. I saved up enough money to get started toward college, and I got a scholarship at the school where my Latin teacher had gone to school. She fixed
it. Can we stop just a minute, Ms. Schultz? I'm afraid this is not... Okay, I'm sorry. I think we can go ahead now.
Yeah, okay. So where were we?
So when you graduated from high school...
Yes, one of my teachers who had gone to Juniata College in Huntingdon was very interested in what was going to become of me because my father, nice as he was, didn't believe in women being educated beyond high school because they just get married and what's the use? And I couldn't convince him that I should go to college. And so that's why I had worked the summer before, and that's one of the reasons I'd worked. I wanted to get away from home. But I'd saved up some money, and the school gave me a nice scholarship and also a chance to work in the dining room to pay my room and board. So I went off to college not knowing how far I'd get or what would happen, but I kept getting work. I worked for my German professor the second year, and then third year. I was there only 3 years because I stayed all summer long and went to classes and had more, whatever they call them, points toward graduation than anybody needed. I specialized in both chemistry and biology because I was intending to be a doctor. My grandmother, who had done most of my rearing because I spent as much time with her as I possibly could at her house, not at my own home, because it was pleasant to be with Grandma and it was not pleasant to be around Mother. So she had always told me that girls could do anything boys could do, and I could be anything I wanted to be. So I said I wanted to be a doctor when I was about 3 years old, not having any idea what I was saying. And she said, "Sure, go ahead, be a doctor." And from there on, I was going to be a doctor. So anyhow, when I was in college, I majored in both chemistry and biology, and also and minored in mathematics because I was good at math. And when I graduated 3 years later, you know, I was terribly young because I'd started to college when I was 16, and now I was graduating when I was 19. And when I applied to medical school, I got an interview because my grades supported the fact that I could go to medical school. But the dean took one look at me, she was a woman, and said, "We've never taken anybody as young as you. You're too immature. You come back and later when you're older. And so I had to go find a job and something that would mature me. So another of my professor at the college had been he was a pacifist and a Quaker, I think, was very interested in doing work at the Byberry State Hospital with mental patients. So he said, why don't you go work there? And that'll help to mature you. I mean, you should convince somebody that you're mature, but I think you're pretty mature already. You've brought up a family already.
I'm about to say you should have told the dean about how you grew up.
I did, but that had no effect on her. She and I were enemies right from the start, as you'll hear. And so I went and worked at Byberry at this mental hospital for a year.
Now, where is this?
It's on the northeast edge of Philadelphia. And it was, the program that I was in was a Quaker-sponsored program. And there were a bunch of men stationed there at the hospital to work on the men's side because they were pacifists and they preferred that to other work that they could have gotten.
This is 44?
Yeah, this is 1944. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of that year, I mean, that was a wonderful experience for me because, first of all, I met my husband that year, and we got married I met him in 44 when I went there, and we got married in 45, which was before the next school year started. We got married in June. So I went back and applied at the same medical school. I didn't think they would take me in a men's medical school, but it turns out I was wrong. I could have gotten into Penn. And it would have changed my life.
Oh, yeah. Which medical school is this? I thought it was Penn. It's not Penn.
It was Women's Medical College then.
Okay.
And later it changed its name to Medical College of Pennsylvania and dropped the Women's.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to work there later, as my biography shows. So anyhow, I started a medical school that year of 44, 45. And I didn't say anything about being married because I didn't have to. I mean, they didn't ask me any questions like that, so I hadn't said anything about it. And as luck would have it, I got pregnant almost immediately after school started and carried the baby right up through. He was born in July. But while I was in that first year of medical school, I was put into an experimental group where they were doing fluoroscopic examination. And when the anatomy professor who was conducting the fluoroscope, operating the fluoroscope, said, Miss Kelly, get out of there immediately. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And as I came out, he said, I think I saw a head. And I said, oh, maybe you didn't know I'm pregnant. And he said, well, you should never have been under the fluoroscope. Why didn't you tell us? And I said, it didn't occur to me. I didn't realize that it was wrong to get under. And so he said, does the dean know that you're pregnant? And I said, no, she's never asked me. And so he said, well, then we'll keep it our secret. But you'd be very, very careful from now on what you do. And you just keep on getting the best grades you can, and maybe everything will be all right. He said, are you married? And I said, yeah, I'm married. And that made him feel better. So he kept it a secret until a number of months later. I think I was 7 months pregnant. Later on, I was only about five or something at the time he discovered my pregnancy. And so at 7 months, they did another test on me in the physiology lab. Three prominent but not very pleasant women ran this physiology laboratory, and they did a test that showed that my blood wasn't precipitating the way they expected it to, and something in my blood, I didn't know what was going on. They had just taken blood and done this test as an example for the other people to see how the results were supposed to look. So they came to me, and one of them came to me and said, my dear, are you feeling well? And I said, yeah, I feel fine. And a little bit later, there's something unusual going on. Have you seen a doctor lately? And I said, no, I'm very healthy. And so a few minutes later, another one of them came to me and said, we want you to report to the dean immediately. And because they figured out that I was pregnant.
But no one wanted to mention the word.
So I had to go down to the dean's office, and she was all a flutter, and she said, "What is this I hear?" And I said, "I'm pregnant. I didn't feel any reason to tell anybody about it because I come to class every day and my grades are all right, and I just figured I'd finish medical school because the first year, because the baby isn't due until July." And she said, "No freshman has ever had the audacity to be pregnant. You can't be sincere about having a career. Do you know that women are waiting all over the world to get into medical school? And here you are taking a spot like this." And I said, "But I've paid my tuition. I want to stay until the end of the year." And she said, "You may not do that." And I said, "I don't think there's any way that you can keep me from doing that." And she got furious with me, but dismissed me. And then she checked it all out, and she was afraid. I mean, back then, women didn't sue for anything. But she had some inkling that I could sue. I mean, I didn't ever know that. And so then she was up a tree. She didn't know what she'd do about my coming back the next year. She let me finish, and my grades were okay. I mean, they weren't marvelous, but they were okay. And she took advantage of the fact that it kept us all in the dark in those days about what your grades were. They flunked everybody right up until the end of the year, and then decided who was going to pass. So, you were in shaky grounds as far as your grades went, except you always knew what your classmates were doing, and you had an idea where your comparative standing was. But she had me in her grip, and she taught the physiological biochemistry course. And she was looking for some way that she could flunk me. So she came to me one day and said she wanted to look at my notebook. And I don't know whether you know enough about how scientists are trained, but your notebook is gospel. You write things down there, and you can't change anything from there on out. Well, she looked at my notebook and told me that it was sloppy. I'd have to recopy it, and I'd better do it well. And so I recopied my notebook, which is something you should never do. It was bad training on her part. And so she didn't have that complaint any longer, and I had done all the experiments better than most of my classmates had, so she couldn't fault the my results. And then apparently she had a hard time knowing what she was going to do, but she decided just to give me a red D on my report card, which said, "You haven't passed, but you haven't failed. You're subject to re-examination." And by that time, I was in Florida having the baby. And I was very, very poor. We had no money whatsoever. My husband hitchhiked down. And I took his ticket for dismissal from the service and rode on the train. So, it was hard. So I found.
Why were you in Florida?
His mother lived there, and she wanted to take care of me and the baby when the baby was born. And I had quit at Byberry because when I got there, not long after we got married, because my husband didn't want me working there anymore. Your life was in danger every day that you worked at Byberry. The mental patients killed attendants every once in a while. And I was in lots of situations where they tore off my clothes. And it was difficult to be there. But I loved it. I loved working with the patients because I didn't abuse them. The other women working there were uneducated women who had some kind of gripe with life and were pretty mean and nasty, and they'd club them with their nightclubs and that kind of thing, whereas the Quakers, of course, didn't allow that kind of thing. And I was trying to be a good Quaker since I was a member of the team that they had put there. So anyhow, it was difficult to be there, especially because everybody there would call you a yellow belly for being associated, for being a peacemaker.
Now, was your husband a Quaker?
Yeah, he's not Quaker, but he was a conscientious objector.
Uh-huh.
and they were very unpopular during World War II.
Yeah.
So I was abused too, verbally, by the women I worked with for being connected with the Yellow Bellies. So where was I?
In Florida, having the baby.
So I went and had the baby. Oh, and I called back to Pennsylvania to say, I don't understand why I got this D on my report card, but when can I come for a re-examination? I'll be back in Philadelphia before September. I can come whenever you say. And she just said, you know why you got the D, and don't you ever set foot on this campus again. So that's my dismissal from medical school. And I took it very hard because I had promised Grandma I was going to be a doctor. And she was no longer living now, but I still took the promise very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I walked into the lake, which adjoined the house where my mother-in-law lived, and had the baby in my arms and was considering, you know, sort of made up my mind, but not quite, to commit suicide, because just end the whole thing, because we were so poor and we couldn't afford the baby. And it seemed to me that it was pretty bad that all this was happening. But once I started to get wet, I got up to my waist, I was still clutching the baby up my shoulder, and I thought, you'll probably succeed in drowning the baby and living yourself and then spending the rest of your life in jail. Now, is that what you want? I walked back out of the lake. I was a better person for it.
Wow, that's...
Yeah. So that's about the end of that story.
You didn't consider any recourse?
No. I mean, women were innocent in those days. They didn't think they had any rights. And so the end of that story, jumping about 20 years, was that the medical college asked me to come join their staff in 1972. And I said, oh no, I wouldn't think. I mean, they wanted me to be their librarian. And I wouldn't think of being a librarian. I haven't been one of them in years. And I wouldn't think of coming to the medical college because I was kicked out of there. And they said, well, you've been so highly recommended, couldn't you just come for an interview? And I said, well, if the interview is to tell you how you ought to do it, you have the worst medical school library in Philadelphia, I'll be glad to give you suggestions for what you might do, because that's what I'm doing these days. I'm consulting in New Jersey, helping them to build their hospital library system. And I said, well, come. And so I went, and I got along very well with the man who interviewed me. He was the director of the pharmacology department. And he said, well, this place really needs somebody who knows the world the way you do, because none of us are satisfied with this library, and we want it improved. Would you consider coming? And I said, no, not as a librarian. I want to go on with the research work I'm doing and that kind of thing, but I could handle the library job on the side, maybe. So he said, well, I'm going to take you down to meet the dean. And the dean came out of his office. He was busy, and he gave me a fishy little handshake, and I went away thinking, well, that's the end of that. I'm not going back there. But he called me then, a week or so later, and said that he talked with Dr. Roberts, the man who interviewed me, and he'd seen my resume and the recommendations from various consultants that they had, and he wanted very much to talk with me when I considered coming in again. And I said, well, I'm busy, but I'll come. So I went in and talked with him, and he just said, what would we need to offer you to get you to come here? And I didn't know what to say, and I said, well, I'd want a full professorship. I'd want 2 days a week that I could devote to my research and not have to do library work. And I don't know what I'd want the same pay as the head of any other department. I'm thinking he'd just say baloney, leave. But he didn't. He took it very seriously. And I got a call to come back for a third interview that others on the staff wanted to meet me, and they thought they could meet my requirements. And so I was out of a job at the time. I was just freelancing, as you'll know why, and we'll get to the proper end of the story. And it was sort of nice to think of having a regular income again and settling in. And I thought it would It would be interesting to be back at that school for a little while. Excuse me.